can you see if your phone number is caught in a data breach? Will the U.S. government crack down on crypto? Something about Avatar The Last Airbender, and in our favorite gaming console that we've ever used. Welcome to our Q&A for surveillance support. Again, these are asked from our patrons, and these are from 170. There actually are none from 171 because we didn't really do a very good job of communicating that. We're going through a little shift, just heads up. So in the Q&A published on Patreon for all of you patrons, that is now a public post. So all of you can actually go listen to it on Patreon, and you're going to see that there's a comment section directly there now under the post. But you can't join the comment section unless you're a paid patron. So that's kind of our new workflow. And it'll make sense if you click the link down below to see it on Patreon. So with that said, let's dive into it. And pretty much the question's from David, and they asked, do you know of a service like Have I Been Pwned for phone numbers? So Have I Been Pwned works on an email basis where you put in your email and it tells you what data breaches you've been caught in. And then pretty much it's saying, is there something like that for phone numbers? And I have not yet found a service like this for phone numbers, unfortunately. I don't know if Nate has, but I'll hand it over to Nate in a sec. But I just haven't seen a service like that. What I have seen is there are a lot of people searching websites that I do like to cross-reference where I can pretty much post a phone number to see if it returns a phone number. And these are going to be something like people searching websites. So I actually have a couple people searching websites that I use to cross-reference a couple data points. Something else is services like Abind Delete Me and other services like that actually do incorporate your phone number as part of the things that they track, essentially. And so it will say like, oh, your phone number was found on this website. However, it's not actually telling you the primary source. The cool thing about Have I Been Pwned is it tells you this email was caught in this data breach, and that's why it's public information, versus something like Abind Delete Me or even me going myself and trying to find my phone number on a random website is pretty much just seeing this secondary, you know, maybe it was caught in a data breach somewhere, maybe someone shared it and they weren't supposed to, and now it's public in this one place. So I think you have to kind of look for more of the public facing damage rather than trying to find the originating damage. But I don't know of a service yet. Maybe there is a service, but I don't know if
I don't know of any either. I like your idea about checking people search websites, although that doesn't really and not that you claim that it did, but that doesn't really address like data breaches and stuff. I feel like I wonder if Troy Hunt would have any interest in adding that, because I know he added a password section that I don't think tells you what breaches it was caught in, but it does tell you like, oh, this password has been breached. And I think it tells you how many times too, that they've seen that. And for the record, that's not just like, oh, it's been caught in this many breaches, but it also tells you, because it tells you how many times it's seen it, it kind of tells you if like, you know, that a lot of other people are also using that password, which is not good. But that said, I feel like this is a good opportunity for anyone who's willing to take this up, because I feel like these days, a lot of the people I run into, it's about 50-50. Some of them have multiple email addresses, even like quote unquote normies. A lot of them have like, they'll tell me they have like one email address that they use for serious stuff like friends and family and, you know, job hunting. And then they have one that they use for newsletters and online shopping because they know it's going to get breached and they know it's going to get sold and full of spam. Some of them will have like three, like, you know, one for friends and family, one for work, you know, official stuff, and then one that's garbage. And those are people that aren't even using like, you know, Simple Login or Addy or anything like that. So I feel like everybody's kind of given up on email, but I feel like phone numbers are currently almost as good as social security numbers in terms of identifiers. And that's something that we struggle with in the privacy community is, you know, phone numbers as services won't accept voice over IP and stuff like that. So I think, yeah, I think if anybody out there has the resources to make something like this, I think this would be an incredibly valuable tool. Especially if you could make it mirror Have I Been Pwned, where it says, here's where the breach came from. Because I've been getting a lot of spam calls from the same area code at my work number lately. And I'm like, I'm really curious to know, because like every other big company out there, we use 20 different third-party vendors for every little thing. And I really want to know which one of them breached it. So yeah, I think... not to be Mr. Capitalism, but I think this is a good opportunity for somebody if you can make a service that does this. Or if there already is a service, please leave it in the comments and let us know. Because, yeah, I think this would be a valuable thing. I'm actually going to mix these up a little bit, so that way we have like one off-topic question and one serious question, and like kind of stagger them instead of having all of them in one chunk. Our next question comes from, or I'm going to take our next question from Captain Morgan, who says, Netflix recently released a live-action adaptation of Avatar: The Last Airbender. Wondering if either of you are fans of the original and have thoughts on the adaptation, or if you have opinions on the trend of live-action remakes of animated media more generally. Yes to the second one. I started watching the very first episode of the original Avatar when it came out. I'm probably dating myself. And it didn't grab me for some reason. I've wanted to go back and check it out again and see if, like, basically give it another chance. I've just been super busy and I haven't. So it's nothing personal. I've just never watched it. So I have no thoughts on the remake itself, but I will say I've seen literal bits and pieces of the One Piece remake. And there's another show that my wife absolutely loves that she asked me to try and get into. And so I sat down and watched an episode with her. There is an uncanny valley on like live remakes of anime, in my opinion, where, because anime is so over the top and exaggerated that when they try to adapt it, it just looks weird and it feels weird. And I even told her the show she showed me, I was like, I feel like I would like it better if it was an anime. And she's like, well, it's adapted from a manga. And I'm like, oh, that tracks. That makes sense. Personally, I'm not a fan of a lot of these live action remakes. I guess some are probably okay. Like the Scott Pilgrim movie was kind of good in my opinion, but it also kind of leaned into the over the top weirdness. I feel like I'm one of those people that thinks animated stuff is perfectly legitimate. Like that movie Nimona made me cry. I'm not going to lie. So I think animated stuff can be just as artistic and wonderfully executed as live action stuff. And I don't see why we have to do a live action remake of everything. And I think I've said this before. I also don't understand why anime fans get excited about live action remakes, because they always suck, in my opinion.
I think I watched the first couple episodes of the original Avatar and I never got into it. So I don't even remember the names of any of the characters. And I have yet to hear people actually comment on a live action remake of anything that was half decent.
I don't know. Yeah, there's one that everybody keeps being like, that one was okay. But yeah, I'm with you. Like, I've never heard anybody be like, bro, the live action of that was so good.
Have you seen a Surveillance Report? Oh my God.
The live action of Surveillance Report is so dope.
I love it. So dope. Next question is from Cracker Barrel Biscuits, and they asked, do you guys think the US government will eventually crack down on crypto and make non-KYC exchanges illegal or otherwise restrict its usage in some way? My first response to that is, ironically, I feel like the US is already one of the most restrictive places for cryptocurrencies. Almost every exchange in the US has to pretty much restrict the certain currencies that they provide. I feel like trying to get Monero in the US is actually rather difficult relative to other things like Bitcoin. And I think the reason for that is it's very privacy respecting and a lot of people don't want to bother with the legal risks of it. And most cryptocurrency exchanges are KYC. So I don't know if they're illegal, but that already is kind of the norm at this point. So I guess I would ask, I feel like it's going to be hard for the US to outright make them illegal, but I feel like they've already implemented a lot of things to make it very difficult for these exchanges to survive without KYC. And I think we've already seen that. And that's why even companies like Binance don't even have like a real US offering. I know there's Binance US, but it doesn't even have like any normal cryptocurrencies that most people would want to probably utilize. I don't know. I don't think that it's already great in a good position in the US as is.
I 100% agree with everything you said. And I also want to add on to that. Yes, I think they can crack down more. I don't follow the crypto space closely.
Me neither.
My interest and knowledge of personal finance is very limited and very surface level compared to how it could be. So between those two things, I know there's also a lot of talks about cracking down on exchanges in terms of like securities and just a lot of speculative investments and things like that. Again, that's all way over my head, so I'm not going to get into it. But I do know there is room for the government to crack down. And long term, yeah, I think eventually they will. Not to get too deep into it, but it's also worth noting this is one of those situations where like you can't functionally outlaw it. Like, you can make it illegal on paper, but you can't really stop people from doing it. Our last question comes from Mr. Camel. What's your favorite game console you've used? Okay. I know the answer to this. I want to caveat this with, I'm not going to lie, I don't think I bought a console since I moved out of the house after high school. Mostly just because I've never really had the money to justify it on. And I think I mentioned before, I tend to buy high-end computers because I do video and audio editing. So I'm like, well, I'll just use the computer for that. I'll double it as a gaming machine. I'm partial to the GameCube just because of nostalgia. I have so many good memories of like Super Smash Brothers Melee, Legend of Zelda Wind Waker. God, what were some of the Super Mario Sunshine? Like, those were some of the most fun games I've ever had. And because they were social games, like friends that I played with, like it was just a good time in my life. So I have a lot of nostalgia for the GameCube. That's the only reason.
Nice. Nice. I'm glad you mentioned nostalgia, because I was going to instantly come in and say, like, I think everybody's answer to this question is purely based on, like, where they have the best memories, and it's not actually, you know, you're not going to hear anyone go, well, here are the specs for this console and why
it's technically better. And that's what I was thinking, too.
No one's going to get into that. I think my favorite game console, because it's just what I started using, and it's what I spent the most time on, especially younger, was the PS2.
I spent a lot of time on that one, too, but, yeah.
Yeah, I liked the PS2. It was fun. I think the game selection was really solid. I think it was crazy too, like, if you played the Kingdom Hearts series, how you could play, like, literally Kingdom Hearts 1 and 2, both on PS2, even though they came out, like, so far apart from each other, I feel. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of fun. And then, I don't know, one of the things, and it's not exclusive to the PS2, I just miss when there were memory cards for like, gaming consoles, because then, like, you have, like, your save, and you can go to a friend's house and literally bring your game and your save and just play at someone else's place. And I feel like you had more control over your games back then.
Or it was almost like a backup, so too. Like, really, if your console got bricked, if the memory card was okay, it's like, cool, now I can just buy a new PlayStation and stick this in, and I'm good to go.
So. Yeah, and I think, I don't remember for sure, but I definitely know there were two memory card slots on the PS2, and I'm fairly certain you could, like, duplicate it and have a backup. Yeah,
you could.
Easily. And, like, that makes sense to me. Obviously, I think it makes total sense why we moved in the more cloud direction, but we definitely lost a lot of, like, owning, we lost ownership on that journey.
I will say, on the topic of specs, the GameCube also had a lot of really dope attachments. Like, they had that, I think I have it, actually. I bought a new GameCube off a friend who was like, it's collecting dust. Do you want it? And it had, like, an attachment on the bottom that plugged in, and you could connect, like Game Boy games. So you could play Game Boy on the TV. I don't know. GameCube was just... They really... I feel like they innovated with that kind of stuff a lot more than PlayStation. Or, like, I think PlayStation and Xbox did a little bit of that stuff. But I feel like... Because, like, PlayStation had, like, DDR, for example, Dance Dance Revolution. But I feel like GameCube really innovated on that next level compared to them. So, yeah, I agree.
It's funny. I played DDR on my PS2.
Yeah, I did too.
I had a whole mat. It wasn't a foldable mat. I had, like, a thick metal, really high quality DDR pad.
No, I had the foldable one, I think. I think.
Yeah. That's wild. I was just talking to someone earlier today about my DDR childhood and how I would, like, finish them, because I used to do, like, the hardest modes, and I'd just be, like, collapsed on the pad when I was done, just dripping sweat all over the pad. I used to have to clean the pad when I was done. I really went hard on DDR.
That's crazy.
Now everyone plays Just Dance, and I'm like, I mean, it's okay, but I'm still trying to I need to find these games, because in my head I have all these random PS2 games I played, and I forgot the names of them. I remember there was, like, a tennis game with graffiti and skateboards, and I don't know what that one's called. There's another one that's, like, the ball that moves and you turn into a world.
Katamari.
And then you...
Katamari Damacy.
Yeah, that's the
that
one.
I know. I remember that one. That game was so weird.
That one
was
fun. What the hell was the name of the graffiti game? Okay, PS2.
That I'm
going to
find
this. PS2.
Ask ChatGPT.
I also played the SpongeBob game. The SpongeBob movie game. Oh my gosh.
I didn't play that one.
Harry Potter. PS2.
I think I've
graffiti.
Played that one a little bit.
Skateboards, tennis.
Oh, yeah. No, I was going to say it sucks now, because, like, now I'm trying to rebuild my nostalgic GameCube collection. And because all these games are out of print and they're so old, and, like, everyone else feels the same way. Like, dude, all I have right now is Wind Waker. And that game alone set me back, I think, like $90 just for Legend of Zelda Wind Waker. Because, wow. Again, it's a classic and like it's out of print now. So it's like, what are you going to do about it? And it's like, well, I want to play Zelda. So, and, you know, for the record, privilege moment. I'm privileged that I can drop $90 on a useless freaking video game for nostalgia purposes. But also, you know.
Okay, it's.
I'm not so privileged. That's why that's the only GameCube game I have, because all the other games, I'm like, yeah, I don't have $120 to drop on Super Mario Sunshine right now.
Okay, the game is Jet Set Radio.
Oh, I've heard of that one, but I never played it. Nice.
Yeah, Jet Set Radio. I don't know where I got tennis from, though. Maybe that, like, one of their characters was in a tennis game.
Okay, see, that's what threw me off, because I was like, I didn't know there was tennis in that game, but...
Sega. Oh, so, okay. So Sega Superstars Tennis has
the character,
some of the characters from Jet Set Radio in it, and so you can play as like Jet Set Radio. That makes sense because I remember being like, wait, I could pick a. In my head, I imagined the graffiti people with the Mario people, and that doesn't make any sense. But no, it does make sense because it's a whole game. Sega Superstars Tennis.
Since we're going down memory lane, I got a shout out for PlayStation. There was a game. Oh my God, what was it called? Something Eve, Project Eve or something like that. It wasn't a good game, but it was fun. It was just a very straightforward, like, you just go through each level. I think it was a third person shooter. Again, not great, but fun. And then
nice.
For PlayStation, there was another game called State of Emergency, where literally the whole point of the game was every level there was basically a riot going on and you just go around and cause as much damage as possible, and it was super fun. It was like Grand Theft Auto, but you're always at 5 stars. It was totally ridiculous, but it was fun. And then for Xbox, wow. Burnout Revenge is the only racing game I ever got into. That game was so stupidly fun.
Well, that's it for the Q&A this week. If you want to ask us a question about really anything, it could be privacy-related, security-related, tech-related, us-related, world-related, let us know. Join us on Patreon. Again, this is going to be its own audio post. So this is a post on Patreon. Just leave your questions right below this post. There's not going to be a different post. Just leave your questions right below here on Patreon. And if you're paying on Patreon, you'll be able to do that. If you're not, you can still view the comments there now. So at least it's not like tucked away. So everyone can see the comments on their own. And that's not like hidden behind anything now. So, yeah. Just a nice side effect for those wondering, because Patreon updated how they do comments. Now you can restrict comments to only be from paid members while still having a public post, which didn't used to allow. So, yeah, really cool stuff. Anyway, we'll see you next week and hope you enjoy.